Okay, so now we're into the public comments.
There is one more.
There is one more.
Is it?
It was on the agenda, yes.
It's ordinance number 2035.
Okay, go ahead, Ashley. Could I have a, wait a minute, let me pull my sash up. Could I have a motion? I guess I'm going to have to put this here. Could I have a motion to accept, a motion and a second to accept ordinance number 2835? Is this the first reading?
Yes.
Okay. Angela, and a second?
Second.
Okay, Ashley. Ashley? Oh, okay, she's talking. Okay. Oh, my pen won't even write. Let me see your pen a minute, because my pen's not writing. Yours is writing better than mine.
Council President, after speaking with administration, I think we should pull that from tonight's agenda. I think it needs to go before you for a work session.
Okay.
And then so we can put it on for the following meeting.
Yeah. Okay, no problem.
So do we need to make a formal motion about that, Kim?
Yes. Go ahead. Who wants to do it? We're making a motion.
I'd like to make a motion to table.
Yeah, to table it.
To table
ordinance 2835. Someone second. Okay. All in favor of tabling ordinance number 2835? Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And the chair votes aye. All righty. So, all of that. Okay, we're going to call on public comments at this time. And you have exactly 4 minutes for your comments. Mr. Jeff Dean, you're first.
Mayor, Council, my name is Jeff Dean. I'm a resident of Salisbury, Maryland. I begin this way because the city's council rules of order, adopted on April 28, 2014, require me to do so. The rules of order govern the conducting of regular council meetings and council work sessions. The city's rules of order spell out some specifics about how the president will conduct city meetings and defer to Robert's rules of orders for unaddressed issues. Robert's rules of order describes the role of the president as the officer that fulfills a leadership role by setting a specific tone for the organization. The president is therefore the officer that provides the people with a predictable and transparent government. The Maryland Open Meetings Act declares its primary goal to be to increase the public's faith in government, ensure the accountability of government to the public, and enhance the public's ability to participate effectively in our democracy. The Maryland Open Meetings Act requires that public business be conducted openly and publicly, and that the public be provided with adequate notice of the time and location of meetings of public bodies. Salisbury City Rules of Order Section 8D states work sessions are considered public meetings under the terms of the Open Meetings Law, and the public can attend. Members of the public or an interested party may have the right to address the council only on items under consideration in a work session. The council president shall control the discussion of the council and the public in accordance with the rules of order. On September 18th, during a work session meeting, you, President Jackson, allowed a large group to speak at length on a topic that was not on the agenda for the proprietor of Homes for Hope. That was not on the agenda for the work session meeting. Allowing public comment on items not on the meeting agenda is in conflict with Salisbury's rules of order. By the language within those rules of order, it is also possibly a violation of the Maryland Open Meetings Act. Last week, on October 2nd, 2023, I attended the work session meeting and submitted a request to make a comment about you inappropriately allowing this group to speak at the previous work session meeting. Vice President Blake was presiding over that meeting and denied my request politely, professionally, because my comment was not germane to an agenda item. I asked to explain my rationale for my request. She denied me again. Vice President Blake did what she was supposed to do under the rules of order. You, President Jackson, the previous meeting, did not. This disparate treatment violates the Maryland Open Meetings Act philosophy of increasing the public's faith in government, ensuring the accountability of government to the public, and enhancing the public's ability to participate effectively in our democracy. You gave one group on one side of the conversation with high stakes a public platform that you did not give to anyone else wishing to react to their claims or positions. President Jackson, I would now like to remind you of your personal conduct at the last regular council meeting, in which you allowed a large number of speakers to take the podium without identifying if they were or were not residents of the city of Salisbury. Most were not. This is a violation of the city's rules of order. You also allowed these presenters to say slanderous things about residents of the city, also a violation of your rules of order. Also in violation of the rules of order, you responded to those public comments by going on a long and passing speech from your president's chair about how the spirit was moving through you, causing you to believe that one of the proprietors of the group is a good soul with a good heart who only wants to save lives. The job of the president of a government body is an important one. The president ensures meetings are run fairly and according to the laws governing their conduct. The president is the breaker of tie votes, and while you are unable to speak on topics, you also bear a responsibility to maintain some vestige of neutrality so that all parties in a dispute feel they have a fair chance of being heard. President Jackson, based on your multiple violations of the rules of the order in short time that you have presented as president, I ask you to either recommit yourself to your rules of order or step down from your presidency. Thank you.
Randy Taylor.
Randy Taylor, 403 Camden Avenue. I really came up tonight. Am I get 4 minutes or?
Four.
4 minutes, okay. Give me a 30-second heads up, okay. Don't shut me down. Talk about this parking garage issue, which I think we made a motion for a vote to tonight. I never really got a formal response on the cash flow that I put together. It was issue one for me. A couple weeks ago, it's been about a month or so ago now, I put together a cash flow. Apparently this garage is going to lose $400,000+, which is a significant amount of money, and I've got no formal response from the city. And then on tonight, I'm finding out that we're moving forward and giving a contract, or at least awarding a construction management agreement to move forward on that project. I want to keep my comments short. I would prefer if we would take a step back on moving forward with this project until we get a sufficient parking study that will, I think, satisfy the rest of us in the central business district that we're going to be sufficiently covered with regard to parking. I mean, reasonable people can disagree, but we can't, I don't think, give up all our surface parking. And even though I know that there's been some versions of what I think Andy's put together for alternate, get comfortable with what the replacement is. And I think it's just a basic. So what I'd like to ask you, in the light of what's going on with this parking garage now, we're talking about awarding this construction management agreement, which I know is a satisfaction of the agreement with the disposition agreement. I would ask, for a host of reasons, because we haven't gotten a parking study, we haven't gotten an environmental impact study, we haven't really done a formal cash flow as a municipality on this parking garage, which I have proven that doesn't make money. In fact, it loses $400,000. We're not talking about $4,000 or $40,000. We're talking about $400,000 with no response from the city. And again, I'm not trying to be Don Quixote over this. I'm just saying this is real. This is meaningful. This is real taxpayer money. So if we're going to be transparent and we're going to be forthright, at least would like a formal response that tells me that you guys have thought forwardly enough on this topic that you can give me a counter argument that I'm not wrong, number one. And number two, that you've made at least an attempt to do a rudimentary parking study, even if it's not done by the developer, or a form that you've made an account for what we need, meaning the central business district needs for parking in and out day to day, for our businesses that are already down there, not forgetting about this parking. I mean, this apartment complex. I think that's right. I think it's important to note that there's a couple of businesses that I'm aware of that are closing as a result of just Unity Square. Forget about the next step, okay? It's real. I think this has the potential to be the worst thing that's happened to the downtown. As much as it's been sold as the greatest thing, it could be the potentially the worst thing. It's a disaster from a development perspective. So that's all I wanted to say. And I wish you would take the time amongst yourselves to debate this, but give us more time to think this project through. I know President Jackson Cheese voted against it from the beginning. I would like to think that a couple of you, again, not taking a fight, I'm just saying this is real. We've been down here for 25 years, and I see it as a big threat, very big threat. So I thank you with those comments.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Carolyn Wolfmouth.
Good evening. My name is Carolyn Wolfmouth. I was surprised and outraged to see on the agenda for this evening, and I found this out Friday afternoon, that there was a sole source award of bid ITB 24102 Town Center Parking Garage for $10,750,000 to Gillis Gilkerson. It's outrageous. There's been no attempt to advertise this contract on your procurement portal. I've checked, and the bid number does not appear, but there is a bid, a similar type of bid, not the exact same thing, but ITB 23120, Parking Garage Rehabilitation Phase 2 that was listed, along with a 214-page document and a 93-page addendum. It generated a great deal of interest. 18 bidders were listed on that portal. So it begs the question, why would you not bid a $10 million contract when there's potentially great interest among bidders? And why this out of the blue, just dropped out of the sky on Friday, sole source bid to the town center when the town center lots have not been sold, nor has the proposed developer of the town center apartments received approval for their project. In fact, your own city planner, Brian Soper, and the developer's attorney, Michael Sullivan, gave erroneous information. In other words, they lied to the planning and zoning board when they sought preliminary approval, which is yet another outrage. I was at that meeting. I heard them state it. They told the P&Z board that they could not do anything, when in fact the P&Z board has the authority to look at it and make a judgment and a recommendation. A written justification is required for any sole source award contract valued greater than $2,000. This is a $10 million contract. It represents 5,000 times that $2,000 figure. That's outrageous that your first line would be, oh, let's go give this a sole source award. This is a cost of work plus fee award in which the public has denied access to a critical document, Exhibit E, the Construction Management Agreement, or CRM. The document that coincidentally was noted as missing from the land disposition agreement during public comment on June 20th, 2023. Council members illegally discussed that LDA in a closed session and voted to approve Resolution 3263. Exhibit E was also the subject of another closed session on July 17th, 2023. And here we are today. The CRM, the missing Exhibit E, is still not publicly available. How can you make a decision? But hey, why not just rush through this project that the council, the acting mayor, the city administrator, and the developer want, but which adamantly is opposed by many taxpayers. And why not do it in a highly unusual manner? Just sneak it in an agenda a couple days before the meeting and hope that no one notices. Well, it was noticed, and it was noticed because there is no transparency with this council. We're not seeing everything. You say you're seeing everything, you're not either. The election's less than a month away, and citizens and taxpayers are paying attention and will widely publicize an outrageous action, such as the sole source of a $10 million contract. Thank you.
Mr. John Wolfmau.
Well, I should be able to get through it because I've timed it for 3 minutes. City financing of parking garage should be halted for a wide range of reasons. First of which, we have the wrong type of contract. Cost plus fee is very risky to the city, especially using estimated construction costs that are not verified by a normal bond bid process or otherwise. Furthermore, sole sourcing requires fixed price contracting based on actual costs, not estimated costs, and require a full summation of all the costs of the prime and all the subcontractors' actual costs. These are many costs, materials, fabrication, etc., and they should be based on verifiable subcontractor proposals which don't exist and may not for quite a while. Not a weak statement in the contract that the prime will negotiate with subcontractors to obtain the sub's estimated cost. Estimated costs don't mean a thing in cost plus. The city has to pay all costs. And these are actual costs of the prime and all the actual costs of the subs. These costs have yet to be determined and may not be for quite a while, but yet we're going to try to push this through as fast as we can. Worse than the above, we have a contract clause that says the prime can raise the maximum contract cost whenever his cost approached the maximum. And this is for the duration of the contract. So basically, when he starts to run out of money a month or two into the project, when we have big holes in the ground, he's going to come to the city and say, I need more money. What is your choice going to be? It's probably going to be try to bond more cost funding for it. This is not a reasonable way for the city to rush into this type of cost contract without time for a normal process of careful determination and analysis of the real actual cost and the subcontractor's cost. These costs are going to be highly subject to be raised. We have a cost for an estimated cost, which is advertised at a certain amount, but there's no documentation how that came about. Under conditions of the cost plus, the city would have to pay all the costs, for all the cost growth, no matter what they are, through the entire contract. It's illogical to have this kind of haste and waste and risk the city's financial well-being just to put something in place. We could have a financial disaster in the city with bond rating collapse, debt service defaults, destruction of the city's financial base. As an example, just using a lowball estimate for the principal cost of the garage and a modest interest rate, the bonding cost results in the city having a huge cost obligation over that period of $20 million. When we borrow money, we have to pay a huge amount of interest on that. So, as warned before, this is a huge black hole for the city without any real tax revenues from the developer. For 10 years, we get almost nothing, 10%. Another decade, we get almost 40%, and that doesn't amount to anything to help. There is no return to the capital of the city. There's no return of the city's cost. It could mean absolute ruin of the city's financial status, our debt service capacity, and it could be a total financial decline that wipes out all our city cash reserves and our financial reserves. It's ridiculous that this isn't halted and re-examined to a better way of contracting this. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Nancy Rosen.
Hello, my name is Nancy Royson, and I reside on Beaver Dam Drive in Salisbury, Maryland. I'm a retired construction project manager for Arlington County, Virginia, where my job duties included advising the county real estate section on property acquisitions as relates to possible environmental concerns. I also oversaw many environmental cleanup projects and large building renovations. One project was overseeing the major soil and groundwater remediation at the county's 40-acre equipment division and trade center, which morphed into a 15-plus year EPA and state-monitored cleanup costing millions and resulting in the property being declared suitable only for industrial purposes. When I heard of the plans for downtown, I suspected there might be some contaminants under the parking lots. Based on the historic Sanborn maps, a number of typical town businesses, including a paint shop, had been there in the late 1800s. Just recently, in a radio interview, a NAV Center historian told us that a car dealership was there. In the 1960s, the city tore down and paved over the abandoned businesses and created the current parking lots. Then I learned in the recent council agenda about proposed ordinance number 2834 to authorize funds for Lot 5 compliance project. It states that contamination was not discovered until after the FY24 budget process and not until the lot was proposed for sale was an environmental assessment done, which revealed the problem, which for starters is costing the city $89,000 in the first year of a more detailed investigation and remediation mandated by MDE. Additional funding in FY25 may be required, and likely for years after that. So this leads back to a big concern with sale of property for the Salisbury Town Center. At minimum, likely there is some contamination from abandoned underground heating fuel storage tanks for each building. And there might be a full-blown groundwater and soil contamination by petroleum products like benzene and MTBE, et cetera, from the car dealership that was there. And that car dealerships typically include vehicle repair facilities with hydraulic lift pits, fueling stations, and the like, such as what I had to help remediate at the Arlington County Trade Center. The old paint shop could be a source of lead and solvents. These could add up to a serious financial burden on the city as owner, seller of these properties. So I beg the question, my timer just went off. So I beg the question, has due diligence in the form of an environmental assessment been performed by both parties for the downtown property sale? Already we know the developer's lender is concerned with flooding and requiring the site to be raised 2.5 feet. And if so, what has the buyer discovered in their environmental assessment? Has this information and associated costs been provided to the city? And even more important, has the city conducted an environmental audit and shared our findings? If this is not done and the proposed sale of lots for Salisbury Town Center proceeds, along with the sole source for our garage construction, it risks putting the city leaders, the bond investors, and taxpayers in a real big, complicated financial and legal bind. How and where in the proposed agreement will such costs and time delays be shared? I hereby assert and advise that this is a reasonable concern and must not be ignored. Until these matters are addressed, I urge city leaders to vote against the award of bid item
2400. Ms. Rosen, your time is up.
And I also urge the city to revise the Town Center Plan Associated Agreement.
Your time is up.
And the many other concerns that are
threatening
the success of improving the downtown.
Your time is up. Please, thank you. Monica Brooks.
Good evening.
Hi.
Good evening. My name is Monica Brooks. I live in Salisbury. But I'm also here as president of Wicomico County NAACP. We have on numerous occasions talked about ensuring that our city is inclusive in our diversity of our bidding in the process of those who are allowed to do projects in the downtown area. We have seen in a lot of the projects of the last 5 years, a handful of the same people's names doing these projects. And I think it's very important, even if Gillis does this project, I think it's very important that we show the residents of this city that there's care and concern and transparency in the entire process. I just saw this on the agenda a few days ago, but it's just concerning. I don't know that such a project, I mean, I'm in construction. I don't want to do that project. I'm not saying to do that. I don't have the capacity to do that space. But I know that a number of people are. I saw in the paperwork here that this started when the justification for the sole source started back in 2015. Mm-hmm. And then 2015, and then it went up to 2021. And then the last thing mentioned was 2022. So I was trying to figure out what happened between February 2022 and this space where we are for this sole source. And I don't know, when you're talking about the $750,000 that the developer would do, that $10,750,000 that was mentioned, that $750,000, I know that question was asked, I still don't fully understand how that part became what was pulled out of the pie. And if that entire number was given in the bid process from the developer, then they said, you know what, we'll cover the 750. That's what it looks like to me. And then the city was like, ooh, you guys are gonna give us 750? Awesome, that helps us. That's what it looks like to me, because there's not been real clear information given in this whole thing. Yeah, so that's what I wanted to say on this sole source thing. Full transparency, because I'm into full transparency, I found out that we were asked to contribute a bid on this project from Gillis. And I guess we might have submitted a bid. I didn't know anything about the sole source portion of it, but that just shows that I'm just letting you know what's important to me and what's important, what was brought up to by many of the people in our organization and our group about this. Lastly, I just want to say I look forward to hearing what comes out of that transportation. Good Lord. The feasibility study. Because as you know, it is a tremendous need. So many of our residents are still walking in harm's way. They don't have adequate transportation, and that transportation is not that what we currently have is not serving the community equitably in any way, shape, or form. That's long overdue. I'd rather us get some transportation before we get this parking lot.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.